You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast.
Number 171, Virtually Inspired, interview with Marcy Powell. That teaser was a piece called Atomic Pebbles. It's something that I produced using AI. You can create your own music using AI at jukedeck.com. It's certainly reminiscent of New Age piano, which is a genre that I like. So stay tuned at the end of the podcast for the full song. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. I also invite you to follow me on Twitter. My handle is RodsPods. As always, I post links to all of the things we talk about on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. My topic today is Virtually Inspired, a really cool website powered by Drexel University Online, and it's a partnership between several organizations. And it's led by Marcy Powell, who's the project director for Virtually Inspired, and Susan Aldridge, who is the president of Drexel University Online. We discuss technology-enhanced teaching and learning and their Virtually Inspired website, a website where educators can come for inspiration on how creative professionals around the world are infusing technology with learning. We discuss the purpose and the function of Virtually Inspired website, the scope of Virtually Inspired, how inspirations are discovered, what some of the most impactful tech is, of course, the usual suspects, VR, AR, mixed reality, blockchain, AI, the role of traditional publishers, and we also touch on some of the more impressive entries on their website. One is by the Singapore Management University. It's CSI Agent on a Mission, where CSI stands for Customer Service Index because it's a game to teach statistics. Marcy also mentions Oral Roberts University. They have a very significant effort in using VR. They are using VR with clip-on glasses for smartphones, even in developing countries. So without further ado, here is my interview with Marcy Powell. Marcy, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm anxious to hear about what you've been up to.
Well, thank you, Rod. I'm very excited to be with you today.
Now, I've known in the past that you were associated with the USDLA, United States Distance Learning Association, and in fact, I'm connected to the local chapter here in Pennsylvania, PADLA, Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey, Distance Learning Association. So I'm well aware of that organization. So before we get started in talking about Virtually Inspired, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you got involved in all of this?
Okay, I'd love to. So my background, of course, is as an educator, and I've worked in various leadership roles throughout my career. One of my biggest passions has always been for the power of educational technology. In my past life, I have been a technology director and so forth. And what happened most recently through the years, I ended up working for a couple of technology companies as a global director over education, and it really developed my relationships with a lot of educational institutions throughout the world. About 3 years ago, Dr. Susan Aldridge, who is the senior vice president for Drexel University, and she's the president of Drexel University Online, and she gave me a call and said, I have this vision. I think you would be the perfect person to do this. And I said, well, I'm listening. And she said, I want my faculty to understand how we can innovate in online learning. I want to see all the possibilities. What are the latest emerging technologies? How are people using it throughout the world? And since you have all these relationships, I would love to see if we could do a research project that direction. And so that's what I've been working on for the past few years. And it just fit very well into what my career has been with distance learning and the way it was first a $1 million grant for distance learning. And then that eventually our team got a $10 million U.S. Department of Ed grant that really focused on educational technologies. And so that just fit perfectly with my career, and that's how I've gotten to where I am.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, there certainly is a need for this sort of thing. I'm on your mailing list for Virtually Inspired, and certainly I'll have links to the website in my show notes for those who are listening and want to sign up. Tell my listeners more about Virtually Inspired. What's its purpose and how does it work?
Okay. So I told you a little bit about Dr. Aldridge's vision. And as we took it, I brought back to her a bunch of research that said, here's what some of the top people around the world are doing, about 70 different case studies, if you will. And she said, we should turn this into a book. And we talked about it for a while. And I said, you know, according to analysts, Gartner and IDC, they say that about 95% of traffic by the year 2019, the traffic over the internet will be video based. And I said, instead of a book, why don't we make this available through a website? So we talked about it for a while and we came up with this idea of Virtually Inspired. And the concept was to share where faculty and leadership and our educators throughout the world could get a quick perspective of what people are doing around the world innovatively. And the way we did it was to create little video vignettes that last about 3 minutes or so that gives a high-level overview of what the group is doing. So, for example, one of the early ones we did was Georgia Institute of Technology. And they had created this online master's in computer science program. And they were having their first graduating classes and even had a young man from China that was graduating. And the first time he ever stepped foot on the campus was to get his degree. And so we covered that kind of stuff. We'll do a little 3-minute interview or video of this, and then we have a landing page that takes you to a lot of supplemental links, as well as some more images and a longer narrative that dives deeper into the story. And that was the idea behind how Virtually Inspired was created.
I see. I've looked at some of the videos. Would you say the scope is limited to higher ed? Are you, I don't know how much there is in the K-12 area, although I assume there is more and more in that area. What's the scope of the project?
I would say, Rod, that a majority of it is geared towards higher ed, but we do have some in healthcare, some in corporate training, as well as K-12 education. So in general, it's more higher education focus because that was our original target audience. But we have expounded upon that.
I noticed that PADLA, our local USDLA chapter, is, you know, has members that are interested in both from the corporate area, K-12 and higher ed. Just occurred to me, I wonder if you can talk to which of those three areas are more in the forefront. Is it higher ed? Is it corporate?
Ah, don't get me started on that. It's funny that you say that. What I see in my career, I've always seen that primary, secondary, or K-12, as we call it in the United States, has always tried to be at the forefront and could move. They're more agile to try different things, even with maker spaces and many other technologies that they do. And so that was a very big part of my background. So most recently, though, I've seen that corporate is moving towards pushing many of the boundaries. Now, interestingly, I see things like I was out at the National Fire Academy up in Maryland, Emmitsburg, Maryland, this summer, and I did a keynote presentation to all of the firefighting training directors throughout the United States. Some of the stuff that we talked about was simulations and things, that, especially when you look at technologies that will allow you to practice things that don't put you in danger, like simulate what it would be like. They were very much in the forefront of some of the stuff they were doing. Likewise, I find that healthcare and some of the health sciences move very much towards the front of creating. So it's a toss-up depending on where you look around the world as to who is leading the way. I'm excited to see that higher education has taken a keen interest on reimagining education.
Right. I noticed on your website there are quite a few international entries as well. How do you go about choosing which entries to put on your system? I assume people can they submit their ideas? Is there some sort of a vetting process?
So originally, I used all of my contacts as well as Susan's around the world to reach out to see. You know, I'm part of not only U.S. Distance Learning Association, but I'm also on a board, not the executive committee, but a board for the International Council for Open and Distance Education. And they're a partner of Virtually Inspired, as is the Online Learning Consortium and UPSEA, the University of Professional Continuing Education Association. And so we leveraged that to look out throughout the world. Contacts I already knew, some of the others that were winning awards, that would bring them to the forefront. But what we've done since has been to open it up where you can go on the Virtually Inspired website, and there's a place that says on the bar at the top that says share your story. And so we've gotten several really good top-notch, I think, examples that have come to us by people saying, have you seen what we're doing? Some will just simply email me, not realizing there's a link there, or they'll email info@virtuallyinspired.org and send us, you should see what we're doing with artificial intelligence, or look what we're doing with virtual reality, or look how we have used created telepresence avatars. So there's a lot of really good stories that come in through word of mouth and through networking, of course, with associations. They're so important.
One area we haven't mentioned is government. I mean, the military has been using telemedicine for a long time. Are there things happening in that area as well?
There are. We actually cover the U.S. Army, one of the simulations they created for a patient administrative specialist position. There was another one, I'm not sure if we've put it up yet, of where they do augmented reality on repairing a helicopter. And so they are, the government overall is doing a lot of forward leaning in emerging technology implementation across various groups, the Department of Defense and others, not just our military, but other militaries around the world. And government, of course, you are familiar, Rod, with government DLA, GDLA, which is the federal government, FGDLA, out of Washington, D.C. It's part of the USDLA. And they have some very interesting things that they showcase. But they've been doing simulations and video conferencing and telemedicine and so forth for quite a few years.
That's right. I think some of the earliest educational technologies that I was impressed with, several decades ago, was from the military and, training, medical technicians and so forth. And they've been doing this for a long time. You mentioned some of the, augmented reality and, AI, some of these, our buzzwords have been around for a long time. We've been talking about AI for forever, it seems. It never seems to come to total fruition. Can you point to some, general areas of sort of high tech that you think are most promising?
Well, yes, I can. I think the top three right now would be in the virtual augmented mixed realities as one of those, artificial intelligence, and then blockchain. I think those are the three technologies that we see that are probably the most talked about that are starting to really make a difference. Artificial intelligent tutors has been really tried a lot, and to see those personal assistants taking off in education is exciting. IBM Watson's Jill Watson has been used for several years. Now you have institutes and universities that are developing their own personalized tutors. So we're seeing a lot of AI really starting to get its feet. virtual reality, augmented reality, mixed reality, including holography, are some of that technology of putting yourself into a 3D world as you're learning has really gained a lot of attention and a lot of momentum lately. Some institutions like Oral Roberts University and now Drexel University is even creating their own V Artifacts. So capital V, capital Artifacts Plus is the name of their repository of over half a million objects, learning objects that faculty can pull into their courses. So with these technologies, and we're starting to see conferences as well, and groups that are coordinating and collaborating on, because we can't do this all by ourselves. So we're all collaborating on what these open educational resources or these repositories of content might need to look like. There's a lot of free content out online and a lot of tools that are relatively easy to use to develop your own. So we're starting to see that really emerge as a leaning, forward-leaning technology that people are implementing in traditional classroom, blended classrooms, as well as online learning. With blockchain, and as most people know, when they first look at blockchain, I think this is the newest technology for us as educators, or we're trying to wrap our heads around it. So we haven't fully figured it out yet. Most of us have heard, using the Bitcoins, but that's a very tiny, tiny piece, a very small piece of blockchain and what it can do. So some of your leading universities like SUNY, the State University of New York, and RMIT, which is Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology in Australia, these people are starting to use blockchain to do the credentialing and the badging and building that way you can trace and track all of your portfolio, so to speak, your professional record of your accomplishment and all these little mini courses. And so we're really seeing that move towards how we can implement blockchain in education.
Right. I think that's really promising. You know, it seems so antiquated to have to, when you apply for a job and they want your transcript to call your alma mater and say, would you send me in snail mail, a copy of my transcript? I'm sure they probably email it now, but even then, how do you know it hasn't been altered and so on? So I agree. Blockchain is certainly a very promising technology. But one of the first things I can remember getting into the educational technology space was the NIH syndrome, not invented here. It seems like we've been talking about sharing educational resources for a long time, but it sounds like from what you're saying, collaborating and with different organizations and groups is helping to people to be able to share. Do you see that as how common is that? I mean, people like to invent their own things, but do you see more and more sharing taking place?
They do. And Rod, and you bring up a very good point, because we've always had this competitive attitude and looking what others are doing and then trying to outdo, or just trying to, because we need to recruit students, number one. And so we're always looking at ways to do that. I think we've moved towards a cooperative instead of competitive. It's cooperation and still with a little bit of competitive, but we're starting to share. Open education is making a big impact throughout the world. And so everyone's looking at how can we do this together? And I think, though, the task is so monumental of the education system that we've fairly enjoyed for the last few hundred years. And suddenly we have to really get into the digital age and move very quickly to get there. So we know we need to do this together. I'm seeing a lot of consortiums. I like the one I'm seeing. I just covered Delft University of Technology and one of their student spinoff companies called Feedback Fruits. And Feedback Fruits is, it started out with how can we make our lectures interactive and engaging? How can we bring this into the digital age? Well, they ended up forming an education do tank, and it's become, I think they've just renamed it and they're about to relaunch the name of it. And the CEO just called me and said he was coming to the States, to Texas, where I'm from, to meet with Texas Tech, who wants to join the consortium. So now you have a European group of sharing with all the universities in that area that are now, it's branching out to an international consortium. MIT is involved in it as well. And what they've done is taken they bring in the faculty that teach, the instructors, and say, what is it you need to be able to do? And then they start brainstorming and thinking through this, a think tank of how could we make that happen? And then this student spinoff is developing it. So it's, I'm really seeing a lot of sharing and people not being as close to the vest, which I'm very grateful for, because we need to do this. If we're going to change it and do it with the speed and accuracy that we need to do it together. And so I'm a big proponent of the cooperation that we can do through our networking and through sharing. That's the reason we brought Virtually Inspired public. When they took all of this research and we said, it's too good of information to keep just in-house, needs to be shared. And so that was the idea, was to create this open source repository of content that makes it easy for people to say, but I don't understand what blockchain is, or I don't know how people are using artificial intelligence. How can I? And then they can easily search and figure out some things that would be good for them. I'm also seeing, and I'll bring this up, Rod, is that as we work through a lot of these universities that get together and create tools, platforms, and resources, they're making those apps available for download free. And that's real exciting. So I'll use a good example that comes from Singapore Management University. Dr. Rosie Ching, who actually teaches statistics, wanted a way to engage her first and second year undergrad students in a more engaging environment. And she knew statistics is not a subject that people really enjoy. Not everyone, some of us do, but not everybody. And so she thought, I need to turn this into a game, but I don't know how. And so she went to her Office of Technology and Learning and said, can you help me? And they provided her with graphic designers and a coder, everyone she needed to create a game. And she created CSI Agent on a Mission, which is Customer Service Index, where these students travel around the world and measure the customer service index of each country and then determine how well the economy of that country is going to be. And so they're learning statistics, but they're doing it in a fun way. She even had one of her French students do the narration over the visit to Paris. And that app, CSI Agent on a Mission, is available for free download. And it's already been adopted like 300 universities around the world.
That's fantastic. Yeah. You know, the thing occurs to me, though, is we still have a lot of these big publishers around, and they see the environment shifting under their feet, I think, as these open education resources come up. Are they going to be in business, 5-10 years from now? Or do you see them, helping to lubricate the sharing of these sorts of things? Do you think we need them?
Oh, I do think we need them. And I do think they'll be in business because they are shifting as quick as they need to. And in my career, I worked for one company that with educational technology, they were leading the way in their niche market and they didn't agree with the way it was headed and refused to move that way and basically went out of business. On the other hand, I worked for AT&T as director of educational advocacy for about 4 years. And it was right as technology and everything was shifting. And they knew landlines were going away. You don't have pay phones anywhere. We're going to go out of business if we don't shift. And they shifted. And, of course, they now have, DirecTV and digital TV. And, they just really expanded. This is what a lot of the publishers are doing. They are seeing what needs to happen. They are partnering with a lot of good companies. I just saw a really good paper. I was trying to remember who it was, but it was a really good paper that just came out this week. And it was put out by two different publishers and a couple of other, I think Google might have been on it as well. And I think that's what they're doing, is they're saying, we have to switch, or we'll, if we don't shift and we don't help others shift, we'll go out of business.
Just one more question I have. I'm going to put you on the spot and see if you can tell me, what are one of the most impressive advances that you have displayed on Virtually Inspired, things that really impressed you that you might want to share with us?
So many are so impressive, and I love all these platforms and tools that people are creating. I'm thinking probably one of the most impressive, I think, was Oral Roberts University and their work with virtual reality. And I was so impressed. They won a USDLA award, and that's what brought them to my attention. I had already started looking at some things, and then there he is, or Mike Matthews, who's the CIO, was accepting an award, and I ran and said, I've got to come see what you're doing. And so it's amazing to me, though, they were the one of the ones that led the way in virtual reality and augmented reality. And what they are doing was, even with students, they have students in 90 countries, and a lot of them are in developing countries. And so we really, you know, we can talk virtual reality all day long, but who can afford a big headset? So they figured out a way to use these little clip-on glasses that are, you can get them for as low as $2 to $4 if you buy enough of them, and they snap onto your smartphone. Well, a lot of the students in developing countries have smartphones, even though they might not have access to Wi-Fi. And so they were able to create ways that if a teacher walks into the classroom, an instructor walks in their global learning center, flips on, they walk in and put in their phone number, everything comes to life. It knows if that instructor is ready to teach a class. It will dial on Zoom to Ghana, Africa, or wherever they're going. And if not, it brings up what they need to create a lesson in AR/VR. But what's interesting to me now is that they continue to innovate. The last time I was out to visit, they created this portal. It was so Spock, Star Trek feeling, Rod, that it freaked me out for a minute. Dr. Aldridge and I went out to look at what they were doing, and Mike Matthews said, "Step through this. Step right over here," and it looked to me like I had headset on. I felt like I was stepping through one of those doors open. I'm stepping in, and the second I stepped in, it was a different world, a totally different world. But I turned around, and there's Dr. Aldridge standing in the room that I just came from. But I'm actually in the middle of a lecture hall. It was the weirdest feeling. So they've gotten so excited about the technology that they have students all over campus creating objects and developing portals, and the athletes can step through that door and feel like they've just stepped onto the field, even though they're inside a building. So it's very interesting to watch what they're doing. They're among one of my favorite, just from pushing the envelope and getting the buy-in. I couldn't even walk around campus without people saying to him, "Thank you for all you're doing," or, "Can I come by? I've got an idea." How hard is it for us to get buy-in at all levels? And I was blown away. So that's probably one of my more memorable. I just got back from Brazil last week, and I'm going to be doing a story on some of the work they're doing in healthcare innovation and education. And I'm very excited to share that, but you'll have to sign up for your audience can do, like you've done, where you'll get the stories when they come out. We won't overwhelm you with a bunch of emails. Just when we post a new example, you'll get a brief, here's what it's about teaser, and you can click on it if you want. But that's coming out after the first, well, it might be out in December, actually.
That's great. How often do you send out emails? of updates?
Well, we have been sending about every 3 weeks a new showcase, but we're realizing now that those are all good, and we have a pretty hefty amount out there already available for you if you go to the website. But we also know that we get a ton of questions from people who want to know how people are handling something, or how are you dealing with, for example, I mentioned developing countries. How are you serving your students in developing countries that don't have access to some of these technologies? How can we better serve them? So we're getting a lot of questions. And one of the things that we've been very blessed to have is a lot of relationships around the world with some of the prominent thought leaders and distance learning leaders all over the world. So we're going to beef up our inspiring leaders section. We have a whole section on our website called Inspiring Leaders, and it's where these leaders who are inspiring will inspire you as leaders, and hopefully that will inspire our students. And so we're going to start adding more resources and more thought leader, little podcast, whatever. We'll have to connect with you again, Rob, on that and see if we can marry the two for a good recording. That would be really good.
That would be fun. It really would. Well, listen, this has been great. I learned a lot. I haven't gotten onto the Inspired Leaders section yet, but I'll be sure to do that. So, again, if you're listening, go to my show notes and see the link to Virtually Inspired. And, Marcy, I want to thank you again so much for taking time to talk to us.
Thank you, Rod. It was truly a pleasure.
Well, that's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I certainly got a lot out of it, and you have to go to their website, Virtually Inspired. And I can tell you, I was inspired. There are so many cool things that are happening, and I'm sure you'll be hearing more and more, not only about the Virtually Inspired website, but all of these very creative educational professionals who are bringing technology into education. So stay tuned for the brief song called Atomic Pebbles. Again, AI from Juke Deck. Until next time, have a great week.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog or send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.